Because I'm constantly thinking about, like, right now I already have an idea for, like, my next show, and it's completely different. And it's not about wanting to change or just for the sake of changing. I think it's just the way I work. I'm just trying to be true to myself in terms of, like, okay, I feel like I've exhausted this right now. If I'm making more pieces with this same aesthetic, I feel like at that point I'm just a designer now, you know.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Lo-Fi Podcast. My name is John Wentz, recording conversations with artists, musicians, and filmmakers, still from my flat in Paris, France. Hope everybody's doing well. Welcome to new listeners. A little couple of updates before we get started. I hope everyone's still doing well. I've been keeping up with the coronavirus updates, and pretty much everybody's on lockdown. So sending my love and a stay safe to all my friends in the States. Here in Paris, we're doing incremental lockdowns. Now we are quarantined till the 15th of April, and most likely that's going to get extended into May. So, not to get into it too much, but again, I just want to send out a well-wishing to everybody out there. I'm going to be trying to get more episodes out during the quarantine, so I'm trying to shoot for two a week, just in case anybody needs more something to occupy their time. Also, this episode is brought to you by No Wave Academy. At nowaveacademy.com, you can view an array of instructor videos. They have video workshops from artists such as Daniel Blimes, Sean Cheatham, David Chaffetz, Paul Christina, Nick Runge, myself, Daniel Seagrove, many, many more. So use this code at checkout to receive 10% off your purchase, LOFI-10, that's all caps, LOFI-10, for 10% off at checkout. And as for myself, I'm sorry to announce that the upcoming shows that I had have all been postponed until further notice. Don't really know what's going to be going on the next handful of months, but do stay tuned. I am in the middle of preparing for a print release, maybe two, and a couple other projects that I'm excited to announce. You can view some of that either on my Instagram at John Wentz or on my website, johnwentz.com. Now, in this episode, I'm very, very happy and excited to be bringing you a conversation with my friend Emilio Villalba. Emilio, I have known for many, many years. I've admired him as a person and as a painter. He's one of my favorite people on the planet, and he was kind enough to take some time out during this quarantine and his busy schedule to chat with me about his new body of work and upcoming show at Modern Eden in San Francisco. Take note, the show was scheduled for this April, but because of the shelter-in-place restrictions that are going on in San Francisco, they have decided to move the show to June 6th. You can view some of the new work on Modern Eden's website, and I'll put a link in the show notes to both that and an interview that Emilio did with Brad from Modern Eden. So in this episode, we talk about Emilio's new body of work, this show entitled Back Home, his change in direction, why he changes direction, and much, much more. So without further delay, I'm very, very excited and honored to bring you this conversation with my friend Emilio Villalba. Hit record, because we'll banter for a bit and then totally get into whatever. How's the show coming along?
Pretty good. I hope. I have a... I think, I mean, it's crazy to say, but I have about 36, 37 pieces so far.
Holy shit.
I know. It's
how long have you been working on this one?
Since June, I believe.
Oh, okay. That's a lot. And they're all like fair sized, right?
Some of them, yeah. Most of them, I want to say, are like 18 to 24 to 36 by 48. So whatever that is, 4 by 3 feet.
Yeah, that's good size.
And then I have a few that are larger. So I think I have one that's 48 by 72. I have two of those, and then I have two 72 by 60s that I'm working on.
Oh, damn. Are those finished yet?
One of them is. The other one I literally started yesterday, or 2 days ago. I was supposed to work on it yesterday, and I just ended up going out, hanging out with my girlfriend and her friends.
Nice. How's she doing? How's Michelle?
She's good. Yeah, she's really good. She's working here in SF, and I don't know. I think I told you, I forgot if we saw you after or before that, but we had a fire at our last apartment.
Oh, I remember. You didn't tell me, but I think I saw you posted about that somewhere.
Yeah, so that was in November.
Holy shit.
I think November 3rd or 4th, because I only remember that because we only had to pay 3 days of rent.
Nice. Thing good to come out of it.
Yeah, seriously. We had a fire. I woke up at 4:45, 4:50 in the morning to the sound of, or what I thought was gunfire. Or actually, No, that's a lie. She thought it was gunfire. I thought someone had broken into the apartment. So I woke up to the sound of it sounded like someone was just going through our stuff in the bathroom broken glass. So I just thought the mirror from the little, from the, like the medicine cabinet thing had been broken and they were just like, going through everything. And that was just the audio that I heard from the bedroom. So then I stand up and as soon as I get up and walk into the kitchen, I see a red glow outside of the window.
Oh my God.
And I look out and that's when I saw the flames and it still didn't hit me. I thought someone had the first thing that occurred to me was that someone was barbecuing or having a fire outside,
Yeah.
And then I was like, what the fuck? Why is there a barbecue? Who's barbecuing at 4 a.m?
And, you do live in the Mission, right?
Dude, totally, man. It's so funny because it's like serial killer shit, Like,
yeah.
Go back and someone's just burning someone's clothes or whatever.
Yeah, in an oil bin.
Right. and then that's when I saw the flames and I heard the crackling of the wood. I was like, oh my God, I think that's like not a controlled fire,
Yeah.
And so that's when I woke up Michelle and it was just kind of like a quick 1 minute panic. We just grabbed whatever we could. Literally, it was just our phones, our keys. I grabbed my ID, my debit card, and we grabbed Bear, our dog.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And we were running out, and I saw that the smoke, or no, someone was throwing water onto the fire. And then later on, I find out that it was our neighbor just dumping water on top of it. He was the neighbor above
Holy
us.
Shit.
And so I thought the firefighters were already there or something, and someone put it out. And I freaked out. I'm like, someone put out the fire, We like looked out, opened the window for a second, closed it, and then our door from the where our refrigerator is in the kitchen, it was like a movie, like milky white, like thick smoke just coming under the door. So I just started filling up the apartment. We walked out, ran out, and the whole stairwell area was just full of smoke. It was pretty bad. Like even just walking luckily we were just on the second floor. So just going down one flight of stairs, I think for a day or two, we both had like bloody noses and shit.
From all the smoke inhalation.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how most people die from that stuff too.
Yeah. I mean, I always heard about that and I didn't realize that how fast it affects you. It's insane. Like if we had to walk like 4 or 5 of those with that amount of smoke, like I know why people just pass out immediately. Like it's brutal.
Yeah, it is. And where was the fire? Was it like on the outside of the, or like on the facade or?
So the fire, we lived right above a barber and a bakery. So the bakery's like electrical room is behind the barber shop. So we live, our refrigerator is like literally above the barber shop and that. The electrical room from the bakery. So like the fire was started right underneath us.
God damn, that's scary.
Dude, so crazy. And I think the bakery, it must have started when the lady arrived and just flipped all the switches on. And there was like, something short-circuited or whatever that the firefighters hit was like a old knob and tube wiring.
This is electrical fire.
Yeah. So it just must have jumped or something, but it's it's not like that shit is on all night, you know. It's, I think she must have showed up and then turned something on, or I have no idea how that stuff works.
Yeah, but, and it's sparked, and then it's old wood and all that shit, and it just goes up quick.
Exactly. But she was the one who called 911. I think we called 911 like maybe 5 minutes, 4 minutes after they did. So they were already on their way.
Damn. And how many stories was the apartment?
It wasn't big, just four, or I'm sorry, three stories. So like the first floor and then the two, or the next floor of units and then top floor of units.
Man, and everybody got out safe. Nobody got injured?
No, no one got injured, but the people that were above us stayed in there way too long. Like they ended up, the firefighters ended up grabbing them with, and they came out with masks on and stuff, you know.
Oh, God damn. What the fuck are they waiting for?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I think everyone was just so shocked. I think they were like in, even though he was like putting the fire out, he like legitimately thought it was out or something. I don't know. It was crazy.
Yeah. And I'm that's really amazing that the instinct you had, like grabbing your debit card and this and that. Because never know what you're going to do in those situations.
For sure. I mean, it's funny I didn't mention this, but I had time. Well, we grabbed jackets and once I thought the fire was out for a second, I went to the bathroom and like Michelle like ran out. She's like, I'm leaving. I'm like, no, I've got to pee real quick. And then when I came out of the bathroom, that's when all the smoke just was like, just filled everything. I was like, oh crap. And it was literally, you know, like 30 seconds or whatever. So
yeah.
It was crazy. But yeah, we had jackets and luckily it was hard to watch because as soon as we stood out or as soon as we were outside, we had no idea what was going to happen. You know, the firefighters aren't like giving us like play by play, you know, details of what's happening. So we were just standing out there and then we see the ladder go up and then the first windows to break are our living room windows. You know, they just smash them right in. We're like, what the fuck? You know, you just see you pretty much thought that they were going to soak the entire apartment. So,
all your vinyl. Oh my God.
Everything. Yeah. And that was the craziest moment because it was just me, Michelle and Barrett, as cheesy as it sounds. I was just like, dude, like nothing matters. And the first thing that I thought about were all my paintings too. So like I had all the paintings for the show. I think I already had maybe 10 paintings, or eight or something. And I was like, damn, like, you know, I can make new paintings, you know, I can get new records. I can like, whatever, it doesn't matter. Like it was just, I was so stoked that we had gotten out because it was like, that could have been so real, you know?
Yeah. Like, you had all that really meant anything to you with you.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So I think immediately I was able to sort of like let go of that. And it just made it a lot, that made the whole process of like losing our apartment and losing a lot of stuff, like a lot easier. To sort of deal with. I was just kind of like ready to move on, you know?
Yeah. That's crazy. So I didn't know that's why you guys moved.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're at a new spot. That last place is like completely, like the apartment is actually like okay, but it's like the fire started to come. So like the kitchen, everything in the kitchen was sort of black. And then
from the soot and the smoke. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The smoke damage was everything that damaged everything. Like we just opened a jar yesterday, Michelle did, and that we hadn't opened since then. It smelled like smoke. That's, you know,
oh my God. Yeah. It sticks to everything, man.
But yeah, the underside of our bed, like the wood, like there was an ember that was like starting to burn. And we didn't notice that until we moved the bed to the new spot and we like took it apart or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of stuff that was like, you know, that we left there just was like completely damaged. Then there was stuff that we were able to save. We were able to save all the records for sure.
Oh, do they smell?
No, not as bad because they were so tightly packed. So all we had to do was like just wipe off the smoke from the edges, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It definitely smelled, but it wasn't like our new, actually what, I think for 5 weeks or like 6 weeks after the fire, both of our cars just still smelled like smoke, no matter what.
From you guys being in it or just from being near the fire?
No, from being in it, from like going back and forth. We stayed with a friend for a week while we were trying to look for a new apartment. And their apartment smelled like smoke from us being there. Our new apartment smelled like smoke for, I think, a month and a half after we moved in here.
From your stuff and from you guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that just sticks to everything. Like when you do a beach fire, you go camping, You're totally sitting around the fire and it just sticks on you for like 3 days.
Dude, that's exactly the same kind of smell.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a little bit more like chemical-y, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Damn. Yeah. I'm glad you guys got out of that, man.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Dude. Me too. What about the paintings? Did that had to have, the smell stuck to the canvas.
Yeah, so the paintings actually had my friend Matt, Matt Gonzalez. I called him, I think like 2 hours after the fire, or after an hour after we were able to go back into our apartments. And I asked him if I could store all the paintings there. And literally that was the first thing that I took out. So it didn't, they smelled, but it wasn't like, I just got them out immediately.
Okay.
And yeah, we just packed them in the car and drove them over to his spot over by the Independent here in SF.
Okay. And those are paintings for this show?
Yeah. Yeah. So all the other paintings I had, man, just, I kind of left them there for a little bit until we had the new apartment.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, all the new stuff is it's wild because this new apartment, that my studio is so much smaller.
Uh-huh.
And the paintings got bigger. So usually I have
your studio's in your apartment, right? Your painting in your place?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And usually it's I have room to put the paintings up on the wall. And this is the first show I've like made a painting and then just let them sit in the corner or stacked on top of something else. And then after it dries, I just turn them around so I don't look at them.
Yeah.
And yeah, I can't decide if that's a good thing or a bad thing, you know?
I was just going to ask if there's any difference in the process in doing that.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely, maybe it's added a little bit of stress to the point where I'm like, damn, the show's a month away. And I feel like I have no work, you know?
Yeah, 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 yeah. So wait, so how were you doing it before? Would you keep them up on the wall? So you were seeing like the show build up as you were doing it?
Totally, yeah.
Oh, so, okay, okay.
Yeah, my other shows, all the other shows I've had them pretty much except for my very first solo show. That one I kind of had it like this, where I just was trying to stack them anywhere I could to dry, you know, like awkward positions for them to dry without being cut, without being harmed or whatever. But yeah, all the other shows I've just had them sort of just set my studio up and salon style if needed, you know?
Right, right.
But, you know, and at the good thing about that is that the show maintains the consistency of the look, the aesthetic, you know?
Right. I was going to ask do you find yourself like referencing the paintings as your paintings and like to make adjustments?
Yeah, if they're up on the walls, I'll definitely look at them, and it's just like you're just kind of like living in it, you know, you're like smelling it or whatever. So I think it's definitely maintains that consistency. But with this show, I think I don't know, I think with this one I have a very strong like direction that I'm going in.
It's very different.
Necessarily need all the pieces around all the time, but it's going to be interesting. I guess what I'm trying to say is that at the show is the first time I'm going to see them sort of all together on a wall or whatever, you know.
It's nerve-wracking, huh?
Totally. Because I had, with the other shows, I was constantly adjusting. You know, if I had pieces up, you know, months to build up, I could look at a piece and I'm like, oh, I'm going to take that down and clean it up, repaint it. Like right now, I have no idea if I should be retouching something or whatever.
Do you think, are you going to help with the hanging, or do you just, you're going to drop them off and go?
No. I've been helping out with the hanging the last year. I think the last two shows or three shows actually I've been helping with the hanging, and I really enjoy it, and I like, you know, I'm still at Modern Eden with Brad and Kim.
Yeah, that's rad.
And you know, they've become like family, and they have been family for me and for Michelle for years now. The night before the hanging, or I mean, I'm sorry, the hanging night, the opening, before the opening, Brad and I just hang out and like try to, I'm sure it makes it harder on him because it's like two opinions now versus just his opinion as to like where everything should go.
Right. Right.
But you know, it's a fun evening or whatever, kind of like looking.
Yeah. It's always nice to have another set of eyes though.
For sure.
Different opinions. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. But the gallery just moved there. I don't know if you heard.
No, where are they at? Cause okay. They left the North Beach.
Yeah.
Location.
So they were, well, so this is now the third location, right? The original North Beach location was at the one I think that you had a show at, or you showed at. I forget. Did you ever show with Modern?
Yeah, Man? Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Many times. And the last one, I never showed. It was before that corner one on North Beach.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. So that one was their first one. And then the corner one on Columbus and Greenwich is their second.
Right, location. Okay. Yeah,
and
that's right.
And then now they're on Sutter and Larkin.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
That's a pretty cool spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're on Sutter, I think. So it's, I think, oh, wow. Sutter is where Hashimoto and Spoke are, mm-hmm. and stuff. Okay.
Yeah, I forget the cross street, but it's on Sutter.
I think they're on, I think it's Jones, right, or something, or Hayes?
Yeah, I wanted to say Jones.
Yeah, I think it's Jones for Hashimoto.
Yeah, Sutter and Jones, okay. So Sutter and Larkin.
Yeah, so we're like 6 blocks towards Venice.
Has that changed anything for them? Are they getting better foot traffic or?
I don't know. Last night was their first opening.
It's that new. Okay.
Moved. Yeah. But it was packed. They had a huge group show last night. I think they had 70 or 72 pieces up.
Holy Jesus.
And the space. So just to, I guess, put in reference, like the space at the square footage at the last space was 850, I think 850 square feet. Uh-huh. And this one's 2,000. So it's like,
are you serious? They more than doubled?
Yeah. It's huge, man.
How is that possible in San Francisco these days?
I don't know. You walk in and you're like, holy shit. It's like, damn. It's one of those places that has like, it's essentially two buildings with the center just kind of ripped to gut it out. So like it's, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So you could tell, man, that there used to be some sort of wall there, or it's just the design of the interior.
Yeah. I'm so stoked for them. It's so amazing what they've accomplished.
For sure. It's,
you know, like getting that started on their own and then to be able to maintain and even expand during the change of San Francisco. That's phenomenal.
Right. Yeah. It's insane. It's pretty wild to think that they've sort of been like thriving the whole time too. I mean, ups and downs for sure, but you know, they upgraded, you know, which is like, it's already hard enough to just maintain your business.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And an art business nonetheless.
Right. Yeah. It's wild.
Man. So that's one of the reasons why you have so much work. You got to fill the whole space.
Exactly. Yeah. Originally, you know, they had been talking about moving for a little while. And when I started the show and agreed to the solo show, at that point, they actually had decided not to move because their lease was up. So they were just going to renew it. And then I guess this place sort of popped up last minute. And I think they decided in November to do it. So it's all been pretty quick.
Wow. While at the same time, they have a child. How old is their kid now?
Turning 4 today, actually. I'm going to be at their birthday party in an hour and a half.
Oh, are you? That's so cool. Tell him I said hi.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I will. I totally forgot about the time change today, too. I just saw your DM about the time change. I was like, oh my gosh.
I totally forgot. I couldn't sleep last night. I'm totally sleep deprived. So I was like awake in the middle of the night. And that's when I saw it too. I was like, oh shit, there's a fucking time change.
No, it's all good. I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah, I was super curious because your work's changed so much, man.
Yeah.
Because there was a little transition period. I remember when you were kind of getting away from doing the portraits. But then it seems like it was like out of nowhere. I mean, obviously it wasn't, but out of nowhere. All of a sudden, I mean, it's not just how you're painting, but your subject matter changed. Then paint application is entirely different than before.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
what happened? I mean, not what happened, but I mean, what, you know?
Yeah, no. It's totally. I mean, it's kind of hard to explain. I think just like in a quick, I don't know, just saying it quickly or whatever. But it's literally just over time, you know. I mean, there's so many aspects to it. So like, why am I changing and then the decisions I'm making, like there's so many different, I think, things that go into it. But I think overall, it's just trying to keep it fresh and fun. And it has to do with my work ethic too. Like as soon as I get into something, I'm just like constantly working on it, you know, like paint it every day. I'm like most artists, you know, you get obsessed with the concept or whatever, and then you just want to see it come to life. Right.
Yeah.
And so maybe part of it too, is that I feel like I exhaust it. You know, I'm like, what more do I need to say with this approach? Right. And you know, in theory, I think maybe my solo show could have been one piece of every single topic. You know what I mean? Every all the ideas that I have, because I'm constantly thinking about, like, right now I already have an idea for like my next show, and it's completely different. And it's not about wanting to change or just for the sake of changing. I think it's just the way I work. I'm just trying to be true to myself in terms of like, okay, I feel like I've exhausted this right now. If I'm making more pieces with this same aesthetic, I feel like at that point I'm just a designer now, you know?
Right. So I want to get back to like the paint application and stuff, but that kind of brings up in my mind, because I've been talking with a lot of people lately about, for most artists, and like, you know, a gallery's advice would be not to change at all. And especially now, this is kind of the worst time as the market's starting to narrow. You want to maintain a consistency. You have no worry about that. You're just like, no, I'm just going to do whatever makes me happy or whatever I'm interested in.
Yeah, I think part of it, I mean, I definitely worry. I want, you know, it would be nice for pieces to sell.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure I've made Brad stress a lot. I think the first time that he came over and he really saw the pieces changing radically.
Yeah.
Definitely could feel like he was supportive for sure.
But as a gallerist, he's got to think of a different side.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was like, we definitely had a talk, you know?
Okay, cool. And they're really supportive.
For sure. Yeah. And they have been, it's been amazing. And I'm glad that it worked out, you know? I mean, that would have sucked if like I changed and nothing, it wasn't successful, you know? I mean, for them.
Yeah.
But you know, if they stopped selling, that would suck for sure. But it's not like I wouldn't stop exploring, you know? I just think it's in me to want to paint what I want to paint, I guess, you know, or explore.
Right.
And it just so happens that I love exploring pieces in a body of work, like a series.
Yeah. And then move on after that.
Exactly. Yeah. So I can still put on, you know, it's, you know, I end up making anywhere from 30 to 100 pieces per series, you know, whether it's one show or it drags on for a couple of years. Like the portraits, for instance, dragged on for I think 2 years. Dragged on, maybe. Sounds like it's barely even got started.
Yeah.
But so the portraits were like a good solid 4 solo shows, I think. I had 2 in San Francisco and then 1 in New York and 1 in LA.
Yeah.
And that was just for the portraits. And even the one in New York was slightly already shifting to like just eyes everywhere. It wasn't even portraits.
Yeah. And more high key too, weren't they? You're changing your key.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I already had a high key exploration, show, I guess, was my second solo show at Modern Eden. Was like, right. I think it was like 5 months after my first like dark painting ones, but, that was still strictly just portraits, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
So that first show in New York was like, I felt was sort of like, okay, now I'm definitely taking a leap. The gallery there was a little worried about it for sure too. We had a talk as well.
Uh-huh.
And he was talking to me about, you know, not expecting the same kind of sales and blah, 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 all that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But that show ended up being really successful too.
Nice. That's encouraging, right? Longer. Yeah. When you're changing, that feels like.
For sure. It was definitely nerve wracking. And then the next show, I think I tried to do a very similar body of work to the dark portraits. And that's when it felt like I was just painting just to make these paintings that were like for sale or for the gallery or whatever, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And also, I always forget about the factor of moving. Michelle and I have moved a lot. And when I sort of switched over to that whole, what everyone calls like the cigarette paintings.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I remember those. Yeah.
Those and that direction, that show was called Symbols of Death, Signs of Life. So that was like more like little icons and stuff. There were cigarettes, eyes, you know, cats, beer bottles, whatever. And that series, I had developed it when we had just moved to our new apartment in the Mission on 24th in Alabama. And that environment was like so much more colorful. You know, the weather in San Francisco is insane. Like you go to one neighborhood and it's completely different. And that was like our sunniest. We were on the bottom floor and it was just a really cool, like colorful environment there. And so the work kind of changed a little bit more dramatically, you know. I mean, more, it was a little bit more, I wouldn't say pop, but, you know, there was definitely pop elements to it. You know, it was fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though it was, like, still, like, emo subject matter, it was, like, this, you know.
What was the emo, what, the cigarettes and bottle caps?
I guess, well, just the show, you know, Symbols of Death, Signs of Life. It's, like, it sounds like an emo album from, like,
kind of, yeah. Are those changes for you? Because that's another thing I'm really interested in lately. I've been talking with people is how your surroundings change you and change what you're painting and even, you know, everything about it. It can, from colors to application and all that. If for you, how much of that, what percentage is conscious and what percentage is just subconscious in the change?
I think it's a combo of the two, you know?
Yeah.
It's like me wanting, allowing it to happen. So this new show is all the interiors. I called it Back Home.
Uh-huh.
And I started it at the other apartment where we had the fire at. And we had moved because our last apartment, that one in the Mission, had the whole building just was infested. I don't know if it's infested, if that's the right word, but with mold. So there was like a mold infestation.
Okay.
So we just ended up moving. And the only place we found that was like more affordable for the space was in the Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
So we had moved to the Richmond, which, you know, is like fog city.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't see anything.
So it was just, we were right across from the Alexandria Theater, which I believe you've painted, right?
I've painted that. And yeah. The best painting I've seen is Kim Kogan's. He painted that.
Kogan. Yeah.
That's an amazing painting.
So if you look out outside of our window, we can see the Alexandria Theater.
Oh, wow.
Literally across the street.
Nice.
Right above the Russian bakery and the other bakery that started the fire.
Yeah.
So we were like in that little Russian neighborhood. And the interior to our apartment, we had carpet, you know, no more hardwood floor. So we had carpet and it was just so quiet out there. And the walls were all white. We sort of wanted to, you know, we were starting this sort of like vegan lifestyle and like minimalism. We were trying to like not have stuff that we didn't need.
Yeah, cool.
And then my painting started, it just shifted in that direction. You know, I spent a couple of months trying to make the same paintings I was making in the Mission, but they didn't feel right. They were so loud and so colorful there. And one day I just decided I'm just going to do a self-portrait of me in the mirror, like brushing my teeth. And that was what started that new series.
Oh, the current one.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was definitely a result of us living in that neighborhood. Like, you know, as soon as you move to the Richmond, it's like, you might as well move to like, I don't know, the desert or something.
Yeah. It could almost be anywhere. You can be in the suburbs. It almost doesn't matter.
Totally. For sure.
Yeah.
So we were definitely spending a lot more time at home, cooking a lot. And you know, our friends would come over, but it wasn't like in the Mission where you just go to a bar and all your friends just show up at the bar, you know?
Yeah.
So it was definitely affected the work. And yeah, the paintings became like quieter, subtle, you know, they were more thought provoking, I guess, for me, or they maybe not thought provoking in a sense where you look at them and you're like, oh, what does this mean? It was literally paintings of like corners or whatever of me being pensive. So it's almost like Magritte style where you're seeing the painting through his eyes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I like how I felt like that when I started seeing him, the way I, like for me as the viewer, like it felt like you turned the camera inwards, so to speak, you know, I was seeing like snippets of your life.
For sure.
You know, which is very interesting because it, you know, if we go back to the portraits, like it's an entirely different thing. Those can be anybody. They can be abstract. It was a very outward look. So I was wondering, yeah, what turned like the camera inwards? To me, that's almost like, that would make me nervous, man, to do a whole series like that, like on a bunch of levels.
Oh man, for sure. The first time I remember showing that piece of me brushing my teeth, I was like, wow, it felt like it was definitely scary, you know? And posting it on social media even too, I was like, oh, well, here we go, you know?
Now it's real.
Round five. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it was going, I always forget because I'm always trying to be like in the next, in the moment, for the day of, you know, painting, and I forget about what was triggered. I mean, it's taking me back now to when I painted that. And, Yeah, I mean, I've been obsessed, like, you know, I've been obsessed with Lucian Freud's work forever.
Yeah, I was going to ask if that was one of, because I don't want to, I hate comparing people's paintings now. To me, it feels kind of rude.
Yeah.
But I had a feeling, especially since I'm here and I get to see like a lot of Freud and similar painters. It reminded me of a mix between kind of like Freud and even Wayne Thiebaud, in the sense where it's not that mm-hmm. classical, you know, transparency versus opacity. There's no thin to thick. It's just on there. The paint is thick. It's decisive and has intention.
Right. Yeah, I think so. When I make new paintings, sometimes I do take in like what's happening now, I guess, contemporary, or what I mean, there's so much happening now, but like little moments of what I like of what's happening. And I really like, especially like in Oakland and San Francisco, you see a lot of paintings and online too that look very flat, you know, and that could be because of the acrylic, you know, sometimes mm-hmm. I think acrylic's a pretty popular medium right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
flat really like is very popular right now.
Totally. And I like the immediacy of paintings, you know, and we go to these galleries. I think I ended up going and seeing Mark Gonzalez's show, the skateboarder at Shendran Gallery last year.
Oh,
and
nice. I love his paintings work.
And dude, he's so cool. And I remember looking at the works. I'm like, at first when I walk in there, it's just, you know, like a typical artist that went to school for art, you're like, what the hell is going on in here? They're just, you know,
yeah
it just seems like just paint on a canvas, you know, and that's all it is. And I remember walking up to the first one and I was in awe of how immediate they were, but how like thought-provoking and powerful they were. And I left the show thinking, I'm like, dude, that is him on a canvas.
Yeah,
like,
his personality and his like his being,
everything.
Yeah totally.
It's like his
yeah.
signature. It's just, it's him on canvas. I'm like, I want to be able to do that, you know, like,
yeah.
And so it was, yeah, it was a combo of that, the immediacy of just, I want just to paint to sort of be direct and almost like a sketch, but I'm just sketching with oil.
Mm-hmm.
And not saying that they're all like layered deep or whatever, you know, there's a lot of layering that happens in areas, but some, there are some marks that are just straight onto the canvas and that's it, you know, like it's, so I really wanted that freshness. And then on the subject matter side, definitely wanted to show like my take on, you know, self-reflection. That's why they started out with mirror uh-huh. paintings, and then it started off with like, you know, corners of the rooms or whatever. I don't know. Stuff that I was just kind of like staring off into space and trying to think of what to paint. And I was like, well, it's literally just right in front of me. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. You're overthinking it.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to think, cause like the types of painters it's reminding me of, it's escaping me, but I really like, it's such a refreshing change to me, especially now. I mean, like everybody, I'm so inundated, you know, because of social media. I'm trying to stay off it recently. So it's really mm-hmm. nice to see these things. Like you had the one, it's just plants in a bathtub.
Oh yeah.
You know, I get, you know what it reminds me of? Actually, one of them is like Lopez Garcia, in that way of just kind of painting your life mm-hmm. and finding a way to make that really interesting.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, Antonio Lopez Garcia, I never really like, I mean, I knew his work and I loved the work, but I never obsessed over it. I remember seeing a book of his drawings once, and that one I really obsessed over.
Oh, they're so good. I have that book.
Super good. And it wasn't until recently we went to, I think it was actually when we saw you in Paris.
Oh, did you see his work in Spain?
I think we saw his work in Spain at the Sofia, was it Sofia Reina? Yeah, Sofia Reina uh-huh. Museum.
Yeah.
At the very top, I just saw a portrait of two people, like older people. I think they were his parents. I'm not sure. And I was like, whoa, that painting is insane. And I walked up to it and it said Antonio Lopez Garcia. I'm like, no, that can't be it's not the Antonio Lopez Garcia that I know, you know what I mean? And it was, it was like breathtaking. And, I think it wasn't until that was the first one I'd ever seen. And it wasn't one of his, you know, well, what I think of as famous pieces or signature pieces or whatever. But it definitely, it's one of those artists that like in photo, it's like, it looks great, whatever. But when you see it in person, you're like, wow, that's a painting. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great way to put it. Cause I was one of those people that definitely obsessed over him, even through books. But once I saw that, it still remains the best show I've ever seen. It was his retrospective at the Museo Thyssen. I think it was like 2012 or something like that. And they had every single piece he's ever done, including ones that weren't, well, of course, most of his shit isn't finished, but things like he literally, there was a cityscape that was two brushstrokes. It was just two brushstrokes of the sky. And they even had that on exhibit.
Wow.
Literally everything.
Did he have any drawing, preliminary drawing under it?
No, it was straight in. It was totally direct. Wow. Really bizarre. Which it kind of made me think it was bullshit because he measures everything.
Yeah, I remember seeing that video of him like measuring in the streets, right? Where like he has all these people like,
yeah, with the calipers and like, stuff.
What? Yeah. And he's like looking in the wrong direction.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
What are you doing, you crazy old man?
Yeah, genius.
But it was the same thing, like seeing those in person. I don't know. I don't like saying things like, you know, that things are intangible, but they were. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't make sense of why they had such a life in person. And it didn't translate in books on print. I mean, they're just some, and even I found like the way he painted, some of it just didn't make sense to me. Cause from a distance, like there's that really famous one of the, it's like a building on a corner is the cover of one of the books. And, you know, from a distance, it almost looks hyper real. Like it looks more real than real. But as I got close, I don't understand how the paint is building up to make that effect. You know what I mean? Like it looked kind of Anne Gale and type of areas. They were just these marks laid down, but it shouldn't breathe like that the way it does. It just made no sense to me. They're phenomenal.
That's wild. Yeah. I think I've been thinking about scale a lot too lately. I just talked to someone yesterday about it, how, you know, the larger you go, I mean, I'm assuming that piece is really big, right?
Yeah, it is. It's fair sized.
The larger you go, I mean, even just looking at my wall right now, you know, it's all painted white, you know, it's one white wall, but because of the windows and the lighting in here and whatnot, there's variety there, you know?
Yeah.
And the smaller you get, the smaller chances you have for that variety. Right.
Yeah. I see what you mean.
So I think like the scale adds to the illusion sometimes.
Okay.
In terms of like, I mean, if that painting was really small, it might, obviously it probably wouldn't have the same effect, you know, cause I don't know. Because even things just look different from afar anyway. You know?
Right. Yeah, the way everything comes together.
Right. And I mean, not on the same thing, but there's a Gerhard Richter here at the SF MoMA, the black and white series of his aerial landscapes. Have you seen those?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love those.
And you know, you get out of the elevator at the MoMA and it's right there. There's I forget if it's like New York or something, but black and white aerial of New York, and it's massive. I mean, I don't even know. It's like 10 by 10 feet or 12 by 12 feet. I don't know. It's huge. And I remember my dad came up a year or two ago and we went to the MoMA. He was just tripping balls like on that painting.
Really? Yeah. Why? What about it?
I told him, I'm like, okay, stand right here. Look at that. He's like, okay. And he just looks at it. He's like, it's a city, whatever. And I told him, okay, just walk up to it slowly. And he starts walking up to it and he like puts his hands on his head. And he's like, what the fuck?
Yes. He gets closer to the marks and it's just kind of abstracting.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just a mess. Not only is it abstracting, but it looks like a child painted it. You know, he was just tripping so hard. But like even something like that, and then you walk away and you can sometimes still see how messy it is from far away. You know, you lose that illusion that your brain sort of calculates or whatever. So I think with some of those pieces, especially like maybe, well, now that I'm painting a little bit larger, I can kind of like, I've never painted large before. I've never painted over 36 by 48. So some of these things I'm just kind of discovering that maybe people discovered, you know, obviously when they first started painting super large, like the power of scale, you know.
Yeah. So how are you deciding one, like which subjects you're going to go large with? And then how's the approach changed for you? Like, are you using bigger brush, like all the formal stuff? Are you approaching it the same way?
Trying to approach it the same way because I'm experimenting on a deadline.
Yeah.
So I think that's the part that's making me, okay, it got to go. Like, this has got to be like, you know, can't spend more than a week on this, you know, and it ends up being like 2 weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's not like they're that large. They're just larger for me, you know.
Well, 60, I mean, yeah, but 60 by 72 is, I mean, that's a decent size though.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is pretty big. I'm just saying like when I was in the gallery yesterday, I saw something that I'm like 60 by 72 is going to get dwarf.
Oh, on those. Yeah.
But yeah, for me, this is huge. I mean, it doesn't fit in my studio, you know, I have to like, My studio is pretty small, so I'm definitely tiptoeing around in here, like bumping into stuff as I'm moving it, whatever. But that's the other difficult thing, is I can't step back. So I can't see what the painting looks like.
Oh, for more that's than, so tough. Yeah.
More than 5 feet.
Uh-huh.
And it definitely affects it. And I have this window that's just glaring right in onto it. Definitely little obstacles to sort of battle, but you know, could be worse.
Yeah. Are you going to have to unstretch it then? Like, how are you getting it in and out?
No, it fits through the door.
Just, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just makes it like Francis Bacon.
Yeah.
His are all the same size.
Dude. Yeah. I mean, going up and down the stairs. I mean, my studio is definitely, I'm trying to keep it clean, like nowhere near Francis Bacon's studio right now. I mean, that would be, I would probably not be in a relationship right now.
Now you'd be a single man.
Totally. But yeah, no, going up and down the stairs was like not as bad as I thought. Definitely had to have someone deliver all the pieces. I buy them pre-stretched. I don't even know how to stretch or make stretcher bars and that kind of stuff. Yeah, just had someone deliver all that stuff, and it was expensive as hell, but, you know, I think just a risk that you have to take just to go a little larger, you know,
go big or go home.
Seriously.
I think that's kind of nice though, to like work on a deadline. I mean, it's definitely risky, but
yeah.
I've always found like with big ones, that size and up, there's so much more, what's the word I'm looking for? It's so much easier to kind of get paralyzed by it, you know,
right.
Be like, oh, I don't know if this is going to work. Oh, I have to step back. You start making excuses. You start getting scared about this, you know, covering the surface. You know, there's all kinds of issues that can get in the way.
Absolutely. And I think about that all the time, you know, and I hesitate like all the time. I look at this, I'm like, wow, this is massive. Like, am I making the right decision? And it's like, who cares? You know, like I remember I've learned so much from you actually. And I remember so many things that you said, and you're like, you've said stuff like in class that like, who are we anyways? Like 100 years from now, I don't care if my paintings last 100 years or 200, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
I'm going to be like I want them to last long, but like, you know, it's who are we anyway? Like, let's just make the paintings that we're making. And you know, you go to a museum and you see an Alice Neal painting that's beautiful. That's another artist I've been really inspired by right now.
Oh,
Alice
cool.
Neal.
Yeah. And, she's amazing.
A little bit more, you know, not, she's more of like what we were talking about, like the portrait, right? There's a difference mm-hmm. between Lucian Freud's portraits and Alice Neal portraits, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like Lucian Freud, like no matter what, if he says he's trying to dive deep into the soul of someone, they're still all self-portraits in a way, you know, like they're his paintings and they're his versions of them. And like, I don't know, they're Lucian Freud signature stamped pieces. Right.
Right.
And, Alice Neal is the same way, but I feel like she really tries to, there is something I think that she's really curious about. Not saying Lucian Freud isn't curious about his subject matter. Obviously, there's like stories, and I'm reading a book on him actually right now.
Oh, which one?
The Lives of Lucian, or is it? Yeah, it's just written weird, but it's just Lucian Freud and then the Lives of.
Oh, okay, Lucian Freud. Yeah, cool.
And
cool.
It's like a youth version, and then there's an adult one. Uh-huh. So like there's one where it's like the first half of his life, and then the other half, and it's a massive book. But I'm starting with the youth one, so we're like. From growing up or whatever. And then there's a really cool documentary on Alice Neal, right, that has been around for 10 years, I think, that her son's made. And it has footage of her in her apartment and interviews with her that's been recorded, and interviews from her son's friends, family members, etc. Have you seen that one?
I don't think I have.
Yeah, I think it's just called Alice Neal or Alice. Okay. It's on Amazon. I think you have to rent it. It's not like Prime.
I'm more of a YouTube type guy.
I'm pretty sure you can get it on there.
Like yeah, okay. Yeah, you probably
can. It's hard to get, but it's amazing, actually. It's really good.
I'll check it out.
And she's been through so many ups and downs, relationship problems in the beginning. And all of her kids, I think, were from different relationships. And she just struggled, you know. It was like broke, raising kids, the fathers all left, and I think she had one of her kids died, I think, at birth or like one or something.
Uh-huh.
So she just had like raising kids and trying to be a painter her whole life or whatever. And with no success, really. Like, it wasn't like she was rolling in with, you know,
Money.
I think she became famous later on.
Yeah, later in
but
life.
But even though she was famous, I don't think she still had the sort of recognition or fame that she is now. You know, now she's Alice Neal in a museum.
Yeah, yeah. Then, now she didn't have that stature for sure, yeah.
I think in 1980 was, or 79, something like that, was her first Met. She had a show at the Met. And I forget who helped her get into that. I think her son knew people there or whatever, but I think Chuck Close might have had something to do with it, or Warhol. I forget exactly how what the connection was, but she was able to get a show at the Met and, yeah, became famous after that, you know, in terms of, like, world recognition. But she kind of has, like, a crazy apartment, too, like, hoarder style. Like, she kept all of her paintings. She's lived in her paintings, and she sacrificed a lot of stuff, you know. Like, her children are, like, sort of, if you watch it, it's pretty funny. Like, at first you're like, wow, are these kids for real? And, like, the kids are successful. One of them's like a really, like, in Wall Street or something, some money business, I don't know. And then the other kid is a doctor. And they're, I say kids, but they're like in their 40s or whatever. And they're just talking about how, like, growing up with Alice Neal, they call her Alice, like, not mom, was, like, traumatizing, you know?
I knew that much. Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that.
And, I guess they were just talk about stories about, like, them living in living in the house or whatever. And she would have people over at, like, the middle of the night, and to go to the kitchen, they would have to walk through the bedroom where they were sleeping. So, like, in the middle of the night, like, they would just have guests in and out of the room, like, all the time, going to party into the kitchen or whatever.
Yeah, that's why one became a doctor and the other went into Wall Street.
Totally. They wanted, yeah, one of them hates, he's, like, super Republican and, like, conservative, and hates, like, he keeps saying, like, he hates, like, the bohemian art lifestyle or whatever. It, like, damages kids and whatever. I see it for sure. But.
Yeah, yeah, you got to kind of feel for the guy.
For sure, absolutely. They're quirky, though. You gotta watch it.
Yeah, I'll check it out. I might watch it tonight, actually.
Yeah, it's good.
I've been trying to hunt down the Mirandy documentary. Have you seen that one?
Oh, no. That sounds cool, though.
Yeah, it came out a number of years ago. It's pretty old. I think it might be like 7, 8 years, maybe.
Okay.
But you can't find it anywhere. It's on their website, but I think they might be out of stock. But you can't find it. I haven't found it on Amazon, any other place.
Crazy.
Not that I do something like illegal that streaming, want to release but
it. Yeah, right. Big Brother listening.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's a lot of things like that that I've seen, that, like, people create these things and then they're waiting, like, they announce it, but then they're waiting still for, like, a bigger production company to, like, buy it and distribute it, or
to get better distribution.
Yeah,
right.
Or they're waiting for festivals. I have no idea why things get delayed.
So is that who you've been into recently?
Yeah.
Like Alice Neal, Lucian Freud still.
I go in and out, you know, phases of, like, just staring at art for a while. And then, like, for instance, this week, though, I just got back on the Van Gogh and Seurat train.
Oh, nice. Man, I love Van Gogh. It's so nice being here to go to the D'Orsay. Oh, man.
Yeah. Jealous, dude. When we were there, at the D'Orsay, there was not one Van Gogh up.
What? Really?
Yeah, they had the wing closed or something, and then even in the Impressionist or post-Impressionism area, there was nothing. There was not one Van Gogh.
It's probably loaned out.
Yeah, I was tripping. But yeah, I mean, Van Gogh, man, is unreal. I just recently started to feel like I'm learning how to portrait draw again, in a new way. And I was never really, like, I was able to paint, figure draw, but I was never really good at portrait drawing from life. Like, I just never practiced it, you know? Especially, like, the Academy of Art way, right?
Yeah.
Like, I could never do, like, that charcoal style. I just never attempted it, really. But anyway, I was just recently trying to learn, not by books or anything, but just kind of like, okay, this is my hatching style. I know how to emulate form with line and hatches, and then also, you know, kill two birds with one stone is like light and form with my marks. So I started making these like hatchy portraits that were like, you know, 5 to 20 minute portraits from life, and sweating, dude, like trying so hard for the last like 4 or 5 weeks in portrait drawing class to just demo and learn, you know.
Man, you love taking risks.
Dude, it's, yeah. It's
you are the king of two birds with one stone.
Fake it till you make it.
For reals. Were those, I saw some that you posted of John. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Ah, those are beautiful, man. Those are really, really, really great.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's funny because like some of the little smudgy areas worked out where really it was me like just like trying to erase the hell out of areas. Uh-huh. And then it was like just happened to work out like around the cheeks or whatever.
When you're saying like portrait drawing though, how are you defining it? What's different for you? Why is that difficult? Like a different way of approaching it?
I don't know. I think before I was just always so focused on the eyes and nose and mouth, you know, the features, not so much the head, you know, treating it as like a full thing. Funny I say that though, because like then I look back and I looked at my site that I put up a couple months ago, and I had portrait drawings, and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I thought I didn't, like, I forget that I've done it before. It's weird.
Yeah.
But in this new sense, like, I felt like I was just, maybe it's not like, obviously it's not brand new, and it's starting somewhere. I'm not starting at ground zero, but, it definitely felt like I was learning how to portrait draw again. Like, I'm like, okay, like, are these measurements correct that I've learned before? You know, how to relearn measurement techniques and trying to teach a new way and a unique way in my way to teach the students at the same time that I'm learning it, you know? So like I'll do a demo and then everyone will draw for 20 minutes. And then after the demo, after I've drawn, I'm like, oh, wait, come back. Like everything I just taught you, like, forget it. You know?
Like, what the fuck's wrong with this guy?
Totally, dude. So I'm constantly trying to learn new ways to teach, and my way, you know, a unique way to for me and my method, you know, not someone else's method.
Yeah.
With the, like those drawings of John, for instance, like literally was sweating after that session. And and John came up to me and like took photos of them and was like, man, these came out pretty good. And I'm like, oh, thanks, dude. And like, I remember just telling him like, dude, I was sore. I was sore that night. I told my friend that I was actually sore. My hands were sore. My back was
from
sore.
Being, just like, from being like so tense?
Yeah, and focusing. Like my head was like over my easel almost, you know, like in front of it, like just staring at John. So going back to the Van Gogh, I remember looking at the Van Gogh book and seeing his portrait painting and then one of his little etchings. And I was like, holy crap. Like, those exact same hatch marks that I was trying to look for, he does in every single one of his paintings almost.
Ah, okay. Okay. That's where it comes around.
Yeah. And is there's a, you know, the famous drawing of the captain or the mailman.
Yep.
You know,
They had that here.
Just a little, the etch, there's the drawing and the painting.
Yeah.
The drawing is like that black and white etching, you know, it's like and if you look at his eyes and that forehead and the cheeks, like he's not just, you know, willy-nilly putting hatch marks in there, you know, they're, everything has a meaning to it, right? Is that it's not a meaning in terms of like, this has to mean something. It's literally his notes. Like he's just looking at this man or person and he's like note-taking, but visual note-taking.
Yeah. You know, yeah. They're deliberate. Like, those marks are very deliberate.
Right. It's like, he's seeing the face and he's like documenting what he's seeing on paper. And it just happens to be the Van Gogh signature, you know?
Yeah, that's what I always love too about like those early drawings of like, you know, with the peasants or like things that turned into what would like the potato eaters and stuff. Those were very like earnest and honest documentations that actually had like a lot of good feeling to them.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's where going back to what you were saying about the Antonio Lopez Garcia and what I've been telling Michelle too. I'm like, I don't want to just work on a piece just to work on it. Like I want to have the energy that day to paint. Like these paintings that I've been doing for this show have been more of a performance than any of my other pieces.
In what way? What do you mean performance?
In a way where like I have to be in mental shape to paint them. I can't just wake up and like, damn it, I have to paint today. Like most of these paintings are all done in a single sitting, meaning like I'm not letting days between to dry. So like if I'm...
Oh, really? It's a lot alla prima?
All of it. Yeah, it's all wet on wet. So oh, like okay. Some of them, even if it takes 2 weeks, like they'll be sectioned off in areas. I'm like, okay, this area just needs to stay wet in order to finish it, you know? So I'll paint that for like 3 days in a row. And then if I need to wait... Whoops. Siri's freaking out.
Damn it, Siri.
Yeah, seriously. Damn it. Now I just lost my train of thought.
Performance patches.
Oh yeah. So, these are all, they're all wet, you know, like some of them, for instance, I'll wake up and I'll start painting at 8 or 7 in the morning and then, you know, finish it till night or whatever, like the whole day of just painting it.
Yeah.
And so in that way it has to be sort of a more of a performance in terms of like, I want every brush stroke, not necessarily to feel like it means something, but I want it to feel like something, like an emotion. I want it to like resonate like I was in the moment painting it. Like it's not, I don't want there to feel like there's a boring mark on there or like a forced mark or anything like that. I wanted them to feel very fresh.
Okay.
So kind of like a you know, like a sports performance or something like that. Like I wanted to be like in shape to paint it. Like if I wasn't ready to go out and like play basketball, for instance, it's going to show, obviously. You're going to be lazy out there and you're going to...
Right. You're gonna, so if you woke up with a wee bit of a hangover, it's not performance day.
Exactly. So that's sort of like yesterday I made the decision. I'm like, well, am I going to paint right now for 5 hours or 4 hours before I have to go to the opening? Or do I go out and hang out or whatever? You know what I mean? It was like, that was sort of what was like going through my head yesterday. And I'm like, I didn't feel like painting yesterday, which is crazy. But... you know, gotta have a day off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're painting that intently, you gotta rest your head. I mean, that's such mental, fortitude.
Yeah. And with the last pieces, I was able to do that. I'm like, oh, cool. I have 4 to 5 hours to paint. I could paint a skull or an eye or whatever it was that I was painting on those, the symbols of death show, you know, where it was all these little icons everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Does that differ from, let's say, like when you were painting those early portraits?
The portraits were very similar to actually this method, you know, but I don't think I realized it at the time. You know, I definitely stressed about, I need 6 hours to paint. Like I would freak out if I didn't have that. Or if like someone was just, oh, just paint for an hour. I'm like, I can't just paint for an hour.
Yeah, I know. It seems like a waste. It takes you an hour to get warmed up.
For sure. Totally. Those first paintings, but with those first paintings, they were layered. You know, I could paint, the black and white, or I mean the black background portraits, for instance, most of those paintings started out as like black and white paintings, you know, grisaille portraits.
Uh-huh.
And then I paint the color on top and it was a whole new portrait, but with some of the blue, the black and white kind of showing through a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I would just cover it completely, but every pass, no matter if it was 3 sessions or 5 sessions, every pass was essentially like repainting the whole thing. You know, I just
layering.
Exactly. Yeah. And not to layer just to layer, but it was like, okay, I didn't hit it the first time, you know, now I'm going to go back or I didn't have time to finish it. And I was like, oh, tomorrow I'm just going to paint the cheek or whatever. It would never work out that way. I would, for some reason, I can't just paint the cheek. You know, I would have to like paint the whole thing.
I see. That's interesting because were you saying like with these pieces, if I don't know if I'm remembering correctly, you wanted them to have more depth? Not just meaning wise, but.
Oh, with these new pieces?
With the new pieces.
Yeah, the new pieces, I think they were more like, I think I said thought provoking. Like,
okay, you meant in that respect. Okay.
Yeah, like in terms of like what I was thinking, you know?
Yeah,
What I was saying, it's like they're from like what you said, my perspective almost, of like little pensive moments, I think, or like. You know, everyone thinks in the shower or whatever, or while they're brushing their teeth, or, you know, the little moments of like zoning out a little
bit.
And then I also wanted them to feel a little bit trippy too, like a little bit of an optical illusion.
What do you mean? In what way? Like optical illusion? How?
So like some of them are like the corners of a room.
Yeah.
And then the tiles, you know, so it's not just the corner of a room, but it's also looking down a bit. So like when you look at them, they kind of throw you off a little bit in perspective now that they're getting a little bit larger.
Yeah.
And then with the wonkiness too of like the, you know, the little Alice Neal in there of like the, it's not just a straight line. It's like a forced wiggle.
Yeah. And I love that, especially with the things with the tiles, because of that pattern, it can become very disorienting in a good way. Yeah.
And also too perfect, right? It's, I remember you saying that too, always talking about the dither.
And, yeah. Harold Speed.
Yeah. And, yeah, he's the one who did that science, the drawing.
Practice
and
science of drawing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that I always think about that stuff too. I always still talk about unity and variety, talk to my students about that. I mean, just rhythm and being able to not have something too, I think you said this as well too. It's like, you know, like how real do you want to get with when something's too photorealistic? And it's only that, you know, it's sterile. It can become like almost unnerving or whatever. You don't even want to look at it. Whereas if you add a little bit of like life to it, a little dither in whatever way you want to translate that, I guess it, you know, it adds that little,
it makes it real. That's what makes it more real than real. It's funny. Cause I'm kind of teaching again a little bit like a mentorship thing. And I was just recommending that book to somebody. We were having a discussion about that. And that's one of the things I still remember from that book is the idea of the dither and imperfections, how he states over and over again that don't be too perfect. That's not what anybody wants to see. And that's where the emotion kind of lies, is in the imperfections.
Totally. And the signature, right? The unique quality that makes it you. It's like you're the one who decided where to sort of change it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And if you didn't, more power like to you, I guess, in terms of like that's people would kill for like a natural dither, you know?
yeah.
Like that natural awkwardness or not awkwardness, you know, this, what makes you special or whatever, or unique. And you mentioned that about like, you just said like the dither almost makes it more real than real. Whereas like someone that's just trying to make it photorealistic, you're just copying the photo, which is already a representation. It's not really real, you know, or a reproduction, I should say.
Yeah.
A copy.
Yeah.
I've gotten more comments on these paintings saying that they look photorealistic. You know, they're like, oh, that looks like a photo. I'm like, dude, these paintings, I'm like trying
to look
the
anything
opposite,
like photos.
You know? Like, yeah. But I've gotten so many comments. Like they're the most comments I've ever gotten that, wow, that I thought this was a photo. I had a double take. I thought it was a photo, like over so many comments. And it blows me away because I'm like, man, have you seen
that?
I think they just say that maybe, I think people now say it looks like a photo when they just think something's real.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I remember actually it was David Kasson who said, he was talking about some kid once saw one of his paintings and it was one of the first times somebody said, didn't say it looks like a photo. They said, the kid said, wow, it looks so real.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably, yeah, what you're saying, what they mean. There's a huge difference between that looks real and that looks like a photo.
Right. Totally. Yeah. I mean, and that's part of the illusion that I was trying to get, like with, especially going larger, I'm like, well, I want someone to stand in front of this and look, feel like they're standing in the room.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, not saying that I nailed it. I just think that might be a next step. You know, and I might try to do that on this. So I'm trying to do that on this large piece that I'm working on. But again, that inspiration, you know, it's like Las Meninas or whatever, Velázquez, you know. Like
best painting
there,
ever made.
You stand in front of it and you're like, I'm in that room, you know, everyone's staring at me or whatever.
Isn't it phenomenal? That painting is crazy. Just fucking insane.
Yeah, it's unreal. And the perspective of that too. I mean, I almost feel like the height of it sometimes, like, is this the height that it was intended to, you know what I mean?
Stand at? I know exactly what you mean.
Like it's like you almost want it to be a little bit lower or something so that like you feel like really feel like you're in the room.
Yeah.
And I think that was the intent of that piece, right? Or at least you know, from the perspective, or I guess it's kind of unknown, but from the perspective of the king and queen, right? Because they're in the reflection.
Exactly.
Of that.
Yep. Yeah.
So I'm like, it's gotta be a little lower.
Yeah. I felt the same way about I forget what the painting's called, but the Corbeil. One with the grave. where they're digging the grave.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And yeah, you're supposed to be at a certain perspective.
Yeah.
That needs to be at a very specific height so you get the feeling like you're the one in that grave.
Right. That's crazy. Yeah, for sure.
So you're taking these things into account with the bigger ones?
Yeah, absolutely. So cool. And I did that with the first tile piece. And, you know, it's hard to maintain that concept every piece. You know, every piece I get inspired to do something a little different. Uh-huh. But I think the overall, my favorite pieces from this show are the ones that I can really feel like it's me, like they're, it's my perspective, you know? But they all kind of have that, really. There's not really one piece that's sort of like a decorative piece. I'm like, oh, I just want to paint a pretty plant, you know? There's like a, and I didn't want to paint plants either because, you know, so like everyone paints plants, you know? And I was hesitant. Like my first 10 pieces didn't have a plant in there, but our apartment is like, has plants in it. So
yeah.
All right, here we go. Plant painting number one.
I think the plants look great, man.
Thanks.
Yeah, they're amazing. Yeah, that's the other thing when you're saying about from that perspective we're talking about. That's the other thing with them is they feel like if I was to compare something to, like I said, like Lopez Garcia, where it's like, okay, he's obviously painting his daily life. The thing that I really like about this new body of work is it may even sound a little bit pretentious, but they seem voyeuristic in a really good way. Like, I'm getting sneak peeks into like maybe a very, I don't know, quiet, intimate thing that's going on in somebody's place, but from a very certain vantage point.
Yeah, for real. I think a big part of that was, you know, and it's also decision-making on top of that too. It's like, yeah, Antonio Lopez Garcia like has a lot that happens throughout his day, just like anyone else, you know, and we make decisions of what pieces to sort of share, right? Mm-hmm. And on the other side of it too, it's like, it is sort of like jumping into that artist, the classical artist lifestyle. Like even like Van Gogh's paintings are his paintings, you know, they're from his perspective. Lucian Freud painted painted all day, supposedly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every day. So he was just painting people that would come over to his studio. But it's like, who the hell is Lucian Freud to just become famous off painting his nude people on a, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Same with anyone else. It's like, you're just there, or like it's songs that are about writing a song. It's like, how the hell did a song about writing a song become famous? Or,
yeah, it sounds like Harry Nilsson or something.
It's really weird to think that like a painting of, or even Las Meninas, which is like such a weird painting. Like, it's a beautiful painting and it's one of my favorite paintings ever. And
yeah, me
it's
too.
So powerful, and that it struck the world, you know. And you look at it, and you're like, "How did a painting with Velázquez in it, like self-portrait, like it's more of a self-portrait almost than anything, too, at times."
It is, yeah.
And you're like, "How the hell did that become the most famous painting ever?" You know, it's really weird. But yeah, and then, so I guess I tried. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna take my again, like, who the hell am I? I'm nobody, but like, I wanted to take on that challenge. I was like, okay, what I'm going to paint like my quote unquote artist series. You know, I'm going to start with self portraits. And then from there, I was like, okay, I'm going to paint the interior and then my girlfriend and then our dog. And then finally started painting plants.
<You know? laughs> Yeah. I love seeing that unfold as you were posting them. It's like, saw a couple. Thanks. Of the dog. I love the one, you have Michelle. Is she standing on a stool?
Oh, yeah, in the kitchen.
Yeah, in the kitchen. Yeah. And the next thing I know, there's a plant in a bathtub. Like, man, he's gone full plant.
No going back.
Yeah, once you get that one fern in there, man, there's no return from the fern.
Dude, there's this one artist that I was really inspired by, and I just remembered. He was a teacher, or is a teacher, at Art Institute, and I saw his work at Guerrero Gallery.
Okay.
I think it's, oh man, I'm going to botch his name. I think it's Terry Powers is the last name. Let me see here. Art. Yeah. Terry Powers at, San Francisco Art.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I know who he is. I thought Kevin interviewed him on his podcast or something.
Oh, did he really?
Maybe I'm wrong, but yeah, I know his work regardless.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Let me pull up his, thingy real quick. This faux pas hopping on the internet.
Here. No, do it.
Here we go. Oh yeah. So little plug, I guess. So his Instagram is Terry FP. But anyway, his works, I remember seeing his work. My friend Matt owns a few, I think one or two of his pieces, and uh-huh. I've seen him at Guerrero Gallery and Incline Gallery. He had a piece there as well. And when I saw his, I was like, holy crap, like that is art. Like there are these beautiful renders that feel very fresh, almost like first go. Not saying he paints them in a day or anything like that, but they're very intimate. Like, and it has nothing else to do with just like painting. I mean, they're just literal images. Like it's not, they almost feel like too unplanned. You know, it just, some of them do obviously feel like planned still lives or whatever here and there, but a lot of it just feels like he just paints like what is the natural environment. You know, if there's like a sock on the floor or whatever, you know, he paints it all.
Right. Yeah.
The natural chaos or the natural design to it.
Yeah.
And he even has references to paintings to other, you know, they're painted in a very contemporary way. There's something I can't put my finger on, and that might just be the freshness of it, the Alla Prima approach, and the non-academic almost look to it. I have no idea. I mean, he must be trained because it's phenomenal, but he has the guitarista, like the Manet, you know, the guitar player, the Manet one, when he was, Manet was really into Velázquez.
Uh-huh.
And he has some references to that. So he has a lot of, he has two paintings that are.
What's his Instagram? Because I'm going to include it.
It's TerryFP.
Okay. Like
Terry F. Powers. But yeah, I remember seeing his work when I started, so I had already been thinking about like painting, like, you know, interiors or whatever and self-portraits, but I definitely think that his work resonated, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really well with what I was going with, and yeah, phenomenal painter.
Yeah, he's amazing. Actually, I'm wrong. That's not the guy I think that Kevin interviewed. So I have to retract that.
Okay.
It was a different Terry.
Gotcha.
Nice.
A lot of Terrys out there.
Yeah, there is. It's a common name. That's great, man.
Yeah. Overall, I'm really psyched on the body of work. I can't wait to see it all. I'm going to do some like more. So the last one I just did too was this small portrait of Michelle. And I did a slightly different approach, which I was a little nervous about for the show. Cause I'm like, oh, this might not tie in well. But I was trying really hard actually to tie it into that wet on wet look.
Uh-huh.
So all I did for the portrait, it's really small. It's 6 by 8 inches.
Okay.
And I just laid down a white layer of paint and then painted on top of that. So I made, instead of like prepping it and like letting something dry and then painting on dry primer or whatever, I just painted on wet.
Yeah. I saw that one. I think you've already posted that one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a great base. So how are you saying you just laid down the white first?
Yeah. I just laid down a thick layer of white and then I just started painting on top of the white.
So wait, the figure, are you tinting it or are you still painting thick? Like, how do you approach that if the whole thing's laid on thick?
Yeah, you have to go thicker.
Oh, so like, you're just really caking on paint over paint.
Yeah, but it's not like dramatically. It's not like raised. But if you look at it from an angle, you definitely see the eyeball is like coming off, or I don't know, it's weird. It definitely looks like there's a surface to it now. Like it looks like uneven, you know. I just go thick and on top. So, cause if not, then all you're doing is sort of like mixing with the white and pulling the white off if you kind of hesitate.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh yeah. Tinting wouldn't work then if you're painting wet into wet. My bad.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So the white does affect it. Like if you look at the hair, I think I was going almost straight black into the hair and it actually like, you know, it changes the color.
Took it down halfway.
Yeah.
Ah, I see. So did you have to change up like, I usually don't talk about like formal stuff, but I'm just curious, like, did you have to change up your brushes too? Are you using the same things you usually use, tools?
Same brushes, yeah. I've been using a lot more for this show, particularly after seeing a documentary on the Impressionists, I just switched over to all bristle brushes.
Oh, okay. Because were you using those Manglins before, those Utrecht ones?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
For all the portrait shows, I was just using what are they called? Mixed synthetic brushes.
Yeah, those Utrecht with the black handle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I picked that up in your class, actually.
I used to love those brushes. I think they're called the Manglins.
Yeah, the first time I saw those brushes, I'm like, dude, that's so cool. He's working with black brushes.
I know. They look cool, too, with a little colored ring around it, like either red or green or yellow.
For sure.
Oh, nice. So you switched over to hog bristles?
Yeah. And then for details, I'll use a small round watercolor brush.
Oh, okay.
And the watercolor brush, I've been using that for years now. I have like hundreds of those. I don't even know why I don't throw them away, but I have hundreds of those just like frayed. You know, they just look like palm trees now.
I know. I always keep those too. Like, especially if they're the expensive, like the Kolinskis, like the Sable ones.
No, I've just been using like the Utrecht cheap ones or whatever. Because I know that I fry them so fast. but you can really load those up. Mm-hmm. So like the frayed ones I actually use, so I could just like mix a lot of paint and then like just like stick my brush into the paint, and you know, you have it really loaded, and it just ends up being like, you don't even need it to be like sharp or anything like that, you know, pointy. You're not even almost using the brush anymore, you know, it's just like the paint that's hanging off of it.
Yeah
And then you press down and you can get like two marks before you have to like reload.
For the bristles, what are you using? Are you using rounds or filberts?
Filberts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I probably should be using rounds. I'm terrible at the technical stuff, man. I'm always like, I have the concept in my head. I'm like, should I go to the art store and get what I need or just work with what I got?
Yeah. I'm the same way. I'm terrible. That's why I was asking.
Yeah. And then for mediums and all that stuff, it's just still straight paint. I haven't been using none of my shows, I don't think, I don't think I've used the medium since the Academy of Art, I think.
Wow, really? Just straight paint?
Yeah, just straight oil.
Man, these things got to take forever to dry then.
You'd think, but I think it just depends on the color, you know? Like blacks, for instance, take forever to dry.
What kind of white are you using?
Titanium white.
That doesn't take a while for you?
Surprisingly, no. This show, everything dries like so fast. I think it's the apartment.
Maybe.
And someone was just, my friend Camilla was just asking me too about titanium white, how hers is taking forever to dry.
Yeah, it usually does.
And for some reason, I feel like it's almost drying too fast.
Yeah, so, you got some weird micro environment in your apartment.
Seriously, dude. Yeah, no idea. I mean, it does heat up in here, but.
And because, I mean, the vast majority of these new ones are white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Just got lucky, I guess. Or maybe something bad will happen later.
No, don't jinx it.
But yeah, no, overall I'm pretty hyped on the look. I can't wait to see them all, and definitely stressed though. Like, I want it to be good.
Yeah, man, these are going to be amazing. This is one of the few times that I really really wish I was in the Bay Area to see this opening.
Oh, thanks, man.
They're going to look stellar, especially in that new space, man, in a really big space.
Yeah, we were there yesterday. It was just, as soon as I walked in, I'm like, damn it, it's bigger than I remembered it being. But yeah, no, it was definitely a lot larger than I remember it being. When I first checked it out, it was, it was huge. But yesterday, seeing it with, you know, a couple hundred people, it was still massive. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, it gives you a little bit more context when you see all those bodies. You're like, man, I can fit a lot of people in here.
Yeah, when it's empty, it was like, well, how big does a painting even look on the wall? You know, now seeing it with paintings on the wall and whatever, it was, it's big.
Awesome, man. When's the opening of the show?
It's April 11th.
Oh, okay, so you got a good month. Wait, and so you probably got to deliver like by the 1st or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But usually I got to get frames. I want to frame the show, I think. But I don't know. It's going to be hard to frame.
Really? You're going to frame these? Are they on a thick profile?
Yeah.
Why do you think you might frame them?
I don't know. I feel like the missing element to them is the hardwood floor, the wood of the easel that color, you know, cause I'm painting them on an easel. Some of them, the bigger ones, I'm painting them on the, like resting up against the wall on the floor. And I just really like the balance of the orange wood, you know?
Yeah. So would you get like a natural wood frame, you think?
Yeah.
Everybody I know goes white. People love those white frames.
Yeah. I haven't, the last show I did was wood frame and I really loved that, the way it looked. Okay. I just always like wood frames. Like you go to museums and you see the wood frames or, people's apartments with wood frames. I always thought wood frame, like I'm a sucker for hardwood floor. Anytime I go to an apartment and I see a hardwood floor, I'm like, that's a nice hardwood floor. And it's the same with frames. Anytime I see a wood frame, I'm like, that's a nice frame.
That is a nice frame, man.
And then, you know, with white or black, I'm like, eh, that's a white frame.
I don't like white. Everybody I know loves white.
Yeah.
No, not for me. I just don't like frames at all. I can't stand frames.
Same. I actually wish I had the guts to go frameless, but I am I'm not secure with frameless right now.
You got enough stress.
For sure. And some of them actually, I have diptychs that are not meant to be diptychs. So, either somehow cling, you know, frame them from the backside if I'm going to go frameless.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that wasn't intentional to like be like artsy or anything. It just was functional.
Which ones have you posted them? The ones that are,
yeah, the one of Michelle on the stool actually is a diptych.
Okay.
Just it's cause it's 24 by 48. So I wanted it to be 48 by 48, but 48, that size doesn't fit in my car.
Ah, okay.
So I was like, well, I'll just have to MacGyver this, you know,
split it in two when in doubt.
Yeah. And, and it kind of added a little quirkiness to it. You know, like the style of the painting is, you know, the wonky lines and the wonky perspective. So like, I wasn't worried that the two sides were going to meet up perfectly, you know? Even though I painted them next to each other, there was always like a weird, like I had two easels up and it's so hard to line the perspective of like the easels leaning up against the wall perfectly. The height of the easels aren't the same. And then the Damn. Tilt of the canvases. So it was like, I was trying to paint across to the other painting, to uh-huh. the other easel, or I'm sorry, canvas. But now looking at the photo, I'm like, well, there's moments that I hit it. And then there's moments that obviously missed.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is I didn't realize that before. I'm looking at it right now. I didn't realize that it was a diptych.
Yeah.
I guess because my brain just assumed, because it's so linear, there's so many lines in there, that I thought that line was part of the background. Because you have that line that's cutting right to the left of her face.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
Yeah. So if you go into a couple of the little details, I think there's one where you could really see the split and it's like the orange, the orange bowl.
Yep. Yeah. And then the crock pot below it.
Yeah. And the first one I did that on too, was this, there's a self portrait that's like straight up like Lucian Freud looking, in terms of perspective where he's looking at the mirror. I did one where I'm looking at a reflection of myself in an iPad. And you just see my shoes. And there's a line going straight down the middle too. You can see the diptych, the split. But yeah, so there's just going to be a few of those. But it wasn't like intentional in terms of like, oh, this would be cool to have a diptych. You know, it was more functional.
Yeah, yeah.
and I'm still, these pieces a little looser, but I'm still using like dynamic symmetry. Like it's one of the things that I've never been able to like,
really? What are you still using? Yeah. I thought you completely threw that out.
No, like I think it's hard to throw it out actually now for me. Like it's even if I tried not to, I'd still subconsciously I'm locking things in mentally, you know?
Yeah, like, that's how I am. There's no way
like
I can't.
I'm not measuring anything really. But when I like let's say I take a photo and I'm like trying to decide which photo to work from, I'll sort of like tilt the photo in Photoshop a little bit to meet some of the dynamic symmetry, just main angles, you know, very Corot, right? Like meat and potatoes, how I used to describe it.
Yeah, yeah, so, it like, just hits the big spots.
Exactly. So yeah. That's what I'm doing on mine. I'm not going all full sergeant mode on these. You know? Nice. So I'm definitely like lining things up with the center. In areas, main diagonals, you know, trying to look for an overall thrust or composition. And a lot of them, you know, are just straight up vertical, but with a little dither, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Or if there's an angle there, I'm trying to sort of look for the overall flow of the piece, if you will, like in terms of like the energy. I know it sounds cheesy, but like, you know, like the the flow of the paint strokes for the gesture of the painting.
Yeah.
Not necessarily for like an arabesque or anything, but just like the old, like sort of weather of the painting, you know, the way that it flows overall. Cause you know, you look at pieces in museums and you're like, especially a Sargent or even a Lucian Freud, and there's something about it that feels like it was painted at one, in one sitting, even though you look up to it like, man, that must have taken hours or days or whatever months. There's still some sort of like overall, like arabesque or flow to the
energy.
Yeah,
especially with Sargent.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. And that's sort of the freshness that I've been trying to maintain on these pieces to make it feel like it's not labored.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, okay, I'm painting this cube today, this block tomorrow, whatever. This plant was painted, you know, weeks after, whatever. So I'm trying to make the painting feel like it's one painting.
Okay. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
So I think that is where that I keep using that word like performance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, and I do it all the time. I think I'm just doing it a little bit more consciously this time, just because it's one picture. I've never really had a body of work where they all feel like pictures, like photographs or whatever. You know, it's all my other pieces. You know, the portraits are portraits on black background or whatever, and they're tweaked. So it wasn't like, you know, this. Even a photograph is kind of hard to get a matte, flat, black background unless you have a studio or whatever.
Right, right. But what do you mean by pictures exactly when you say they feel more like pictures?
Because they're not like, you know, there's nothing really, I'm not messing with them. Like, I just, they're just scenes.
I guess maybe that's
a better way to describe it, is a scene.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I've never really painted scenes before.
Gotcha. Was that a big leap for you? Because that, I mean, when I look, even scrolling through, like, I see like the transition you were talking about, mm-hmm. but the big drastic thing is going from portraits to interiors.
Right.
Did that feel like a big leap? I haven't done interiors in a long time, but there's so much to juggle with it.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be, but I was like, okay, how do I do this my way? You know? And it just happened, thankfully, but like I had a little bit of a concept going into it, you know, and the concept isn't just visual to its application, you know, and
right. Okay.
That whole thing, what I was just saying, I wanted them to feel like I already had a vision of what I wanted, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then it was just about, okay, how do I do this and how do I do this fresh, efficiently? And also like something that I would enjoy looking at or whatever, you know?
Right.
Because, you know, in the end, even though there's all this other stuff that adds to it, it's still like an image, you know, it's like Hockney says or whatever, you know, they are notes, but there's a overall visual there, but they're like somehow documents, right? He always talks about the document of the piece. So like, how do I want for someone to analyze the image just as an image without having any sort of explanation about it, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Are you going to, include more drawings in there? Cause you have one drawing.
I have one drawing on this page, but on my other account, I have all the other drawings. Yeah. I have six drawings. For some reason I hesitated to post them on this, on the main page. Cause they were like, you know, I kind of wanted them to be like studies almost, which they are.
Yeah.
But then I ended up liking them so much that I was thinking, like, oh, I'm going to include them in the show as pieces.
Yeah, I really like them.
Thanks.
Yeah. And especially like, just like, because the one that you've posted like on the main page, it's so colorful. And I'm just trying to imagine like, not just the contrast of the color with the paint, but on being that it's on paper as well.
Mm-hmm.
It just has a really nice overall like contrast with substrate, with color, with application, the way that you're hatching on them and stuff.
Thanks. I really like them. And like you said, like against the white, there's always something really fresh and contemporary about, you know, painting or drawing on white, you know, the white that comes through and, I always wanted to be one of those artists that got away with that, you know, like going to a museum and you see like a Cy Twombly scribble on a paper. You're like, why does that look so good?
It's
like,
yeah.
Well, it's color on white, you know, like, or even a toned color or whatever, but there's just something about the freshness of that medium or whatever, or of the paper. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I know. It's really alluring. It's just so very direct. And it's still, to me, the thing about paper is it feels like, it comes off like scripture to me because it's like a book.
Right.
So I don't know. It just adds this, like, it's almost more elevated to me than paintings are, like works on paper.
Dude. Yeah. There's something like, it's almost like a treasure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it has to be done right. I feel like, you know, obviously, or else people would be doing it. People would be getting away with it all the time.
Yeah. I think there's a separate challenge to it, like you were saying.
Yeah. And I think that with this particular show, I was able to sort of quote unquote get away with it. I'm sure I could have done it with the other one easily. I could have just drawn versions of those paintings. But I think with this one, it felt more honest, you know, like I was like, it was legitimately a study. And I had a break at school and I was like, oh, I'm going to do a little drawing of this painting that I want to create. And it just, there was so much energy in it that I was like, oh, cool. This is like it was a good break from painting.
Oh, nice. Nice.
And the redundant pastel too. So it's,
are they oil pastels or the chalk pastel?
I think it's chalk pastel.
Okay.
Again, I'm terrible at the technical stuff. I just bought like the Prisma new pastel.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. New pastel. Yeah. It's just the chalk one. Yeah. They have such a cool look to them. That's why I like the oil pastels too.
Yeah. The oil pastels are softer, right?
Yeah. And they're oil paint.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's just that same, that like, it's like a crayon, like that hatchy effect that you can get.
Yeah.
It has so much movement.
Yeah. And the hatchy effect that I have on like the rendering of the portrait there, that's where I was like starting to, I'm like, okay, I think I know how to portrait draw. Like, and that's where I wanted to get sort of like my note taking. Like,
oh, okay. I think I see what you're getting at.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like, I'm like, how do I translate this over? I just wanted to develop my sense. Like, how do I read things or whatever? How do I look at things and what is it that I'm really seeing versus what it is that I was trained to see?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, when you go to class or whatever, you're like, okay, look for the shadow shapes. And then I'm like, dude, but there's not always shadow shapes in the real world. You know, there's only shadow shapes obviously there's shadow shapes, but it's,
yeah,
not like
there's not always Rembrandt lighting though.
Right. Exactly. So it's like, what do you do when there's no shadows, right? What do you do if it's a Polaroid photograph that you're working from or whatever? So I was trying to figure out like, what is it that I'm looking for always when I paint and draw? And I am looking for forms and the directions of these things. I'm not saying I discovered something new. People have been doing this forever and telling me to do it forever. I'm a dummy and it takes me to sort of, I have to like arrive on it on my own. You know, I have to realize it on my own for it to sort of click.
Yeah.
And then once it clicks, it's there forever. You know, you earned.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a great way to put it. You've earned it. You searched for it. You worked at it and you earned it. Now it's ingrained.
Right. So I think that's what I mean. Like I was definitely, and then after that I was like, okay, how do I do portrait drawing from life that way? Like what I have to earn my sort of like portrait drawing as a teacher, like rights, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So when you're doing it, like back to that, cause now that I'm understanding better with, in terms of light, when you're in the classroom, do you change the lighting then?
No, we still have sort of that traditional lighting, but,
okay. So you're just working within that context, trying to do it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Cause I think before I was so focused on the shadow shapes, I would just get, okay, shadow shapes. And I was
the academy training. Yeah. I still
and
do.
And after that, I'm like, well, what do I do after this? Like it wasn't consistent to my application when I'd go over to the light side.
Yeah.
So I'd be like, okay, shadow side check. And then light, it's like, well, do I hatch with the grain, across the grain? Am I blending?
With the form,
I don't even know how to blend. Yeah, totally. Like so off. And then I'm like, well, am I, those drawings are almost like, well, am I painting with charcoal or am I drawing with pencil? You know, like it's that method to me seemed like it was painting with charcoal, you know, not to talk down on that art at all. It's beautiful.
Yeah, but it's its own specific thing for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it wasn't for me. It wasn't my voice.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's And if it was, then I would have kept going for it. But it just, I've tried it and it just didn't feel like me. You know, I wasn't, I'm like, this isn't my drawing. This is, I'm trying to emulate someone else's look or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So this method is, works for me in terms of like being able to render everything, like light, including light and shadow, as if it were one entity. Like it doesn't matter that it's turning into shadow or anything. It's just all the same.
Right. It's just one singular form.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then being more literal about what I'm seeing. So if the shadows aren't darker than the hair, don't draw the shadows darker than the hair.
Not, you know? Don't push for that drama.
Yeah, exactly. But that was for me. Not saying I can't like push things here or there, but like, it was just like the way I was trying to go about it. I was trying to be a little bit more literal about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped out, and it's been helping with my new portrait paintings, you know, like the one I just did of Michelle. I was really trying to focus on the literal aspect of the piece, and at the same time trying to represent what I'm seeing with my sort of drawing of it, my note-taking of it, or my painting, right? The way I'm like rendering form and whatnot.
Yeah. So, are any of these, like you're talking like the portrait of Michelle, are you using photo reference for everything?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Just one. And I think that's just realistic for me. You know, it's a new age, you know, and everyone uses photo references. It'd be so difficult for me to just be able to.
Oh yeah. I have zero qualms with
easel
it.
In my bathroom or over the water, the sink with the running water, you know,
racking up that PG&E bill or the water bill.
Totally, dude. Destroying the earth. But yeah, no, I definitely want to, like, I was thinking about, like, I've been thinking about what I'm going to do next. And I was thinking about, like, you know, doing a body of work, painting from life, which would be amazing to do. Or painting from memory. I still have, I think I was in your class when I read about it, but Degas, because I remember you were really into Degas. And I
oh, yeah, too, and still my fave.
I remember a quote that said, only paint from life. I'm sorry, only draw from memory or paint from memory or something. I forget what he said, like draw and paint from life, but then go back to your studio and paint from memory. Or
yeah.
Something.
Yeah.
Like, I forget the quote was, but I was like, what the hell does he mean by that? And cause you know, sometimes you hear these quotes and they're so abstract, you know?
Yeah. Or yeah. Like, they're
abstract and you don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like for instance, the Manet quote was, look for the darks. The darkest darks and the lightest light, and then everything else will just happen. I'm like, no, it doesn't just happen.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
But now that I'm like hitting, I'm like, oh, maybe now I know what he means by that, you know? But it's like going back to that thing where you kind of have to earn it, right? It's the same with a lot of these quotes sometimes, I feel like. Like, I heard this quote 10 years ago, but now I'm like, oh, I kind of know what he means.
Yeah. Well, no, I think too with a lot of those, because of the time, they were poetic in a way that it's hard for us to translate, because there was one like, one of my favorite Degas quotes was, he was talking about painting the figure, and he said, you can put mud everywhere else if you want to, just let me choose where I put the reds.
Oh, that's cool.
And I, for a long time, it's like, why? Why'd you say it like that? I don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, until I finally realized.
Cool. I mean, yeah, I probably just,
yeah, I dig it. I'll say it. But then after a lot of painting, and like you're saying, it's like earning it when I'm painting from life. And it's like, and then I finally clicked. I'm like, flesh tones are 90% mud. It's really the reds that pull everything together. And then when I looked back at Degas' works, I'm like, oh, he's so deliberate with the reds. That's what holds and gives the figure life.
That's crazy.
But I'm like, man, there was 10 like better ways to say that, Edward.
Totally, dude. That's so funny. Only him.
Yeah, the master.
It's funny, like, yeah. No, I have to look at more Degas. He's beautiful, man. It's almost overwhelming. Like, I can only take Degas like weeks at a time, and then I'll have to take a break for a year or two.
It's just, yeah, I'm the same.
It's too beautiful. And he's the best, or he was the best. I mean, it's just...
I mean, for my opinion, I mean, in terms of just composition alone, there's, I think it pinnacled with him.
Yeah, I think he was like the most aesthetically like beautiful out of all that of the group, you know. Like, you could argue, I guess, Monet too, but Monet was a little bit more brute, you know. There was so like, he, you know, Monet had the moments of the Jackson Pollock of the group.
yeah you're right.
Yeah. Whereas like Degas could be more like the de Kooning, you know. It's like every de Kooning is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he took chances like de Kooning too. Is this, and when you look at some of de Gaulle's like compositions, like, man, this is a textbook example of what not to do, like with regards to tangents or something like that. But he knew what he was doing in such a way that he could orchestrate it, that it built up tension or somehow still culminated in some kind of beauty, you know, and it shouldn't, but it does.
I think also it has a lot to do, like de Kooning's work, it all feels like it just flows together, you know, like one picture or one whatever, you know? And I think with especially Degas' pieces that have these like weird breaking the rules moments, the piece still keeps you involved, even though he's like luring you to a corner or there's a weird tangent somewhere. The piece still kind of keeps you moving and keeps you engaged.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but the pinks now, I'm going to have to go, or the reds, I'm going to have to go back and look at that. That's crazy. I can picture it now, like red noses, obviously, like ears and like maybe kneecaps.
Yeah,
and, stuff like
and even
that.
The pinks. I mean, the pinks are just a light red. Just when you look like some of those ballet dancers, he'll put the pinks on the cheek and stuff.
Right.
And the rest is just mud. Which, and also made sense to me then when, I forget what school it was like Cheatham was a part of that, Sean Cheatham. Maybe it was the art center where they taught something called the mud palette.
Okay.
So everything was, just, it looked like literally they're mixing mud and then they're just, you're delicately and deliberately placing reds and pinks and stuff like that.
Dude, Cheatham has been another inspiration. I mean, I remember Cheatham's work when I was, even before I ever painted, or I was an animation student. I think I was like 18 or 17 or something, or 19 maybe. And seeing his work, and he was a student, I think, still at Art Center.
Yeah. He skyrocketed even as a student.
Dude. Yeah. I remember seeing his work and I was like, holy crap. Like, and then now knowing that who he is and how young he is, or, you know, and it's unbelievable. And he's still, I actually got a chance to meet him last year here in SF.
Nice.
And super nice dude. Just every portrait demo post that he posts is like breathtaking, you know. He's just a beast.
Yeah, he's a master of his craft.
But yeah, I heard that he's gonna be here in the Bay soon.
Oh really? To do a show?
No, I think he might be like relocating, I think.
Oh really? That's weird. Yeah. He goes from LA to San Francisco.
Yeah. I don't know. Crazy people.
Well, yeah, why would you do that? If I go back to the Bay, I'm moving to LA, man.
Dude, the weather's so nice down there compared to here.
It's amazing. Last time I was there, when I was in February to do the video thing, it was the first time I'd ever seen it rain in LA. And I lived in LA for 2 years.
That's wild, man.
Yeah.
Amazing. I grew up down there in
you're from
Orange
there.
County area. Yeah. A little further south, but yeah, I just needed to get away from that area. And then SF just appealed to me as like this. When I moved up here, and every time I visited, I don't think I remembered like the fog and the cold and the, you know, it could be like hot during the day and then freezing at night. And then once I moved up here, I was like, oh crap.
Yeah. Well, and when you moved though, you moved at a really good time. San Francisco is still amazing.
Oh man. It was so cool and so intimidating. I remember like walking in a bar and I was like, this is insane. I do not belong here. You know, like, everyone was so cool. I'm like, man, is everyone in a rock and roll band here? Like,
if not, unreal. It looks like it.
For sure. It was unreal. Yeah. Now it's like completely different.
I know.
Now you walk around, it's like, wow, is everyone everyone works at a tech job or something? I don't know.
Yeah. I was so bummed when I saw that the Hemlock closed.
Oh man, dude.
I saw so many good shows there.
The Elbow Room just closed.
Yeah.
Amnesia just closed.
Oh.
Damn, what else is everything is closing, or like, yeah, it sucks.
Man, we need live music places. Jesus.
Yeah, for sure.
It's such a shame. Which is another thing, I don't want to keep you too long because we're almost 2 hours, man.
Oh, yeah,
but I always love, of course, looking at your art, but I found myself so intrigued at your posts when you're posting your vinyl.
Oh yeah.
Cause I'm super, we talked about it before. I mean, I can't collect vinyl anymore cause I went minimal a few years back, but I'm so still obsessed with music. And, as much as I hate to admit it, cause I know Spotify has its evils for musicians.
Yeah.
It's opened up so many bands for me that I was never aware of.
Totally.
You know? So what are you currently listening to, man? Because every time I thumb through, it's like something different. Like I'll hear Creedence, and then it might be the Kinks.
I'm definitely going through some, like, you know, every week is like a new phase.
Yeah.
Like right now on my record player here in my studio. So we have two record players. I always sound like super privileged here, but yeah, we have a record player in the living room for when we're chilling. And then I have one in the studio. I focus more when I have the record going because it's on the computer. You know, it's distracting.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, right now I have Sun City Girls.
Awesome.
On the record player. And then, I have a little like cue. Behind that, I have a Robert Wyatt record who I've been super obsessed with right now.
Uh-huh.
And he was the drummer for Soft Machine.
Yeah.
And then I have Simon Day, soul, like kind of funk band. I think the album came out in 71. I have a Yola Tengo record right behind that.
Excellent.
And then, the Guilty Pleasure, man, Peter Gabriel.
Which one?
I have the Melt album, and then right there, and then the So, like the 80,
oh yeah yeah yeah
87 or
killer albums
or whatever, dude. Every time, I swear to God, man, every time I play So, the album, tears, dude, like bawling. Really? I can't, like, I'm like, am I gonna put this on and just start waterworks? Like, I just got the reissue, and that came out a few years ago, and a month ago, and I was playing it, and the song Don't Give Up with Kate Bush.
Yeah, Kate Bush, yeah.
Dude, as soon as that song came on, she started singing it. Like, dude, I couldn't hold, I was like literally bawling in here.
Wow. It
was insane. That album to me is so nostalgic. My parents, like growing up, I can remember them like in the living room, like dancing together, or like, you know, just holding each other to that song.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. But, and then I have to stop talking about it, or so I'm going to get choked up. And then, the Halu Merhia is like the Ethiopian, musician.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I know Ethiopian music.
And then, I have a bunch of like, I have a big queue right now. I'm kind of blind right now. I can't really read.
Yeah. So you go through like each week, you might change up the queue. Like you get kind of obsessed with a certain thing.
For sure. Oh, yeah. Dude, Steely Dan right now, man, off the hook.
Oh, yes. Dude, I'm like, yeah, and they just played not too long ago, too.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we saw Kiss on Friday. That was funny.
No way. Was it the Oracle Arena?
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Unreal, dude. My first time seeing them, it was just like unreal.
Yeah,
like,
that was my first record was Kiss.
Crazy. Yeah, last year I had a whole, like, I remember I had Kiss posters in my room in middle school before I even really knew what they sounded like, you know?
Oh, did you have the ones from the solo album?
I had the posters. No. I had like Guitar World magazine posters in my room. Yeah.
Nice.
I wish I had the original ones.
Yeah, because I still have the, because I don't buy vinyl anymore, but I still have in storage, I put on my vinyl. And I have the four solo albums, and each album came with a poster.
Oh, right.
That's a puzzle piece. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I have the Ace Frehley solo one.
Oh, that one's so good.
Yeah. Last year I was obsessed. For the last 2 years I was obsessed with Kiss, like just going through their whole 70s albums.
Yeah.
And incredible, man. They're so good.
How was the show?
It was awesome. It was crazy. I mean, it was a spectacle, you know, I mean, I already knew what the live shows were going to be like, but it's just, you can't even, I mean, you know what they're going to be like, but seeing it is a whole nother thing. Paul Stanley like flew, like he just grabbed onto this like chain thing and like flew from the front stage to this like backstage thing across everyone. Wasn't even tied in or anything, man. I was like, wow. It's the fireworks, the pyrotechnics, the fire breathing, like the blood out of his mouth. Like it was just unreal, man. It was crazy. And the fans are insane. Everyone just, we were going to paint our faces, but we were running late.
Oh, I saw tons of people with painted faces, of course. I mean, it's like that every Kiss concert.
For sure.
That's amazing.
Music's always been a huge part of like the process for me, you know?
Yeah.
I definitely have been painting in silence every once in a while, for sure. It like helps me, especially refining pieces. When I'm finishing, sometimes I'm like so locked in that I just won't even remember to turn off the record player. Just be keep spinning on the last, you know, that last little bit before it hits the plastic or the paper, whatever. And then, but yeah, flipping the records is good. You know, every 20 minutes or whatever, you kind of get a little.
Yeah, that's nice to kind of get you up, step away from the painting.
Yeah.
That's the thing I miss about it, because I'll listen from Spotify or, you know, sometimes
it just goes on forever, right?
And it can go for hours.
Yeah.
And I'll never get up.
Sweet, man. Well, I'm going to have to probably call this just so I can get up.
Yeah. Thanks for taking the time out, man. It was really great to catch up with you and hearing about the new work.
Dude, man, thank you so much. This is awesome. Every time, I mean, I say this every time I talk to you, but like we gotta talk more often, dude. This is awesome.
Anytime, man.
Cool.
Well, all right, thanks Emilio.
Thank you.
Lo-Fi Sight and Sound Podcast is an American artist living in Paris, France, in conversation with artists, musicians, and filmmakers discussing context, the creative process, and studio practice. You can find us on all streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. Also at www.lofipodcast.com, no hyphens. Please rate and review. It helps more than you know. If you can't rate and review, then please share this with a friend. Lo-Fi Podcast is recorded, mixed, and edited by myself. Intro music is also by me. Thank you for listening.